Introduction. Ron. As I write this, I'm sitting in a car in Queensland, Australia, getting driven to the set to begin the second week of shooting on my 26th feature film as a director. I'm multitasking, jotting down notes for this book while framing shots in my head and glancing at the call sheet to remind myself of the work that's scheduled for today. Now, I've been looking at call sheets in the back seat of a car since the 1980s, but this time, I really look. My name appears in three different places: director, producer, co-founder of Imagine Entertainment, Ron Howard. That's me. I've never been one to take for granted the eventful life I've led. Still, seeing my name in print triggers something in me. A feeling of stepping outside of myself. It could have all been so different. My name could easily have been Ronnie Beckenholt, had my Oklahoman parents not made the brave, crazy decision as young lovers to move to New York to become actors. Dad wouldn't have changed his name from Harold Beckenholt to Rance Howard. Mom, the former Jean Spiegel, would have become Jean Beckenholt, and today I would be... what? Wait, I know. How about a farmer in north central Oklahoma, where my dad's folks were from? As farmer Ronnie, I grow corn and soybeans on the 40 acres that my family didn't have to sell to a conglomerate to keep the lights on. I use some of this yield to fatten up a few pigs I still raise. It's long hours and hard work, but fortunately, I have the company of my brother Clint, 5 years my junior. Clint and I also have a side business, cleaning out and repairing independent oil wells in the area. Anything to squeeze a buck out of the land. When commodity prices are up, we do okay. Every day at dusk, we wearily call it a day, taking off the ball caps that protect our bald Beckenholt heads. I've arrived on set, and it's time to start setting up the first day's shot. But another what-if strikes me before filming gets underway. Suppose my folks did stick with show business. Suppose they followed their dream to California, driving cross-country in 1958 with all their earthly belongings packed into a 52 Plymouth, including 4-year-old me. In this scenario, some things turn out the same as they did in real life. I become a successful juvenile actor, playing Opie Taylor on The Andy Griffith Show and Richie Cunningham on Happy Days. I am a household name in the 1960s and 1970s. But here's the twist. Those roles are what I am best remembered for. I never pursue my teenage ambition to become a director. I simply keep on acting into adulthood with mixed success, though I do enjoy the warm notices I've been receiving lately for playing the grandpa in various Christmas movies on the Disney Channel. Neither of these scenarios is a bleak one. I would have considered them positive outcomes. As a matter of fact, the Beckenholt farm is still in the family, run by my cousins, and I have plenty of actor friends my age who, though they've had their ups and downs, wouldn't trade their experiences for anything. But I have been fortunate to see my life turn out incredibly well, to not only realize but surpass my dreams of making a living as a storyteller. Until recently, I was not particularly inclined to contemplate the why of this. But when my father died over Thanksgiving weekend in 2017, at the age of 89, his passing kicked off a round of introspection on my part. Clint and I were now orphans. Our mother had died in 2000. It was a sad time, but also, in the big picture, a time when we found ourselves counting our blessings. For both of us, life was good and fulfilling in all the ways that mattered most. Clint and I made a pilgrimage to Dad and Mom's now unoccupied house, our old house, in search of photos and home movies to use in Dad's memorial service, which was held 2 months after his death. As we went through Dad's personal effects, Clint and I shared family stories in a verbal shorthand, unintelligible to outsiders. Mom and the paint cans. The bathroom graffiti at Desilu. Bicycle pump blood. Our parents' story had come to an end, a lot for us to process. As we contemplated this reality, we experienced a shock of recognition. Their journeys were rich and strange in ways we hadn't realized until that point. That made our journeys rich and strange, too. I'd never before viewed my life this way. For years, my stock answer, when people asked me, "What was it like to grow up on TV?" was that it seemed utterly normal, because it was the only childhood that I had ever had. Clint, who was still a grade schooler when he starred in Gentle Ben, another hit television series, would tell you the same. My answer was too pat, though. To us, our childhoods seemed normal, but they were really anything but. We grew up in circumstances that were profoundly unusual. Dividing our time between attending public schools, being tutored on set, and working in an industry fraught with way more snares and traps than we were aware of in our innocence. Our parents' own show business aspirations were never realized as fully as ours, yet neither of them ever articulated or even telegraphed any bitterness or resentment toward us. They were show people, but they weren't narcissists. They were stage parents, but they weren't monsters. And Clint and I, even though we were as familiar with sound stages and makeup artists as we were with playgrounds and wiffle ball, grew up in their down-to-earth image. Mom and Dad managed this feat with remarkable grace, navigating their boys through terrain that, by all rights, should have left us psychologically damaged. And make no mistake, Clint and I didn't get through our childhoods unscathed. We both have our share of emotional scar tissue. But like Indiana Jones in that famous scene where he narrowly escapes getting crushed by a giant rolling boulder, we somehow made it through intact, ready for the next adventure. As the parent of four children, now thankfully all grown, I wonder, how the hell did Mom and Dad pull this off? How did we?
Clint. Ron talks in positive terms. He's a glass half full guy. But if we're playing the alternative realities game, some unsavory outcomes pop into my head. I'm not sure I would have handled those harsh Oklahoma winters particularly well. As Granddad Beckenholt once wrote to Dad about the local weather in a Christmas letter, "Wind blow, rain, snow, frigid temperatures and sideways hail don't hold much appeal to me. There's a good chance I might still have become a familiar face as a young man to the Oklahoma State Troopers." Any speculative Clint Beckenholt conversation should factor in the potential for brushes with the law. As it is, I don't know if I'd even be here right now if it weren't for Dad. Even when we were kids, the term child actor was shorthand for future fucked up adult. Then, as now, Hollywood was littered with cautionary tales. Carl Switzer, who played Alfalfa in Our Gang, died the year I was born, shot to death at age 31 in a dispute over money. Bobby Driscoll, who starred in such 1940s Disney movies as Song of the South, fell into heroin addiction when the industry no longer had any use for him. I didn't spin out as tragically as those guys, but it wasn't for lack of trying. I put Mom and Dad through their unfair share of hell in my teens and early adulthood by getting loaded and carrying on like an idiot. Yet Dad never bailed on me. He drew me in closer, using his salt-of-the-earth sensibility to right the ship and get me on the path to sobriety. Like Ron, I experienced a whirlwind of thoughts and emotions the day we went back to our old house after our pop died. Staring out at the lifeless backyard, I pictured Dad doing his antiquated 40s-style calisthenics in the sun, with his loyal dog Sheriff waiting for him to finish so that he could curl up under his master's feet for a nap. Then my mind went further back, nearly 50 years earlier, to when Ron and I were young. Like lots of American brothers, we often spent our afternoons in the backyard shooting hoops. Unlike most brothers, we sometimes spent our afternoons in the backyard shooting movies, with Ron pointing his Super 8 camera in my face, directing me in his earliest attempts at narrative filmmaking. I sometimes demanded that he pay me, because I was used to getting paid to act. Yeah, I guess we were different. What spared Ron and me from becoming Hollywood casualties are the values Mom and Dad instilled in us. It's true that we didn't become farmers, but we inherited the farmer's work ethic our folks brought with them from Oklahoma. We were grinders and scrappers. Showbiz may seem glamorous, but each battle is won in the trenches, with heavy doses of perspiration and preparation. We spend our nights doing two sets of homework, our assignments for school, and our run-throughs of the next day's lines with Dad. Not that he was any kind of joyless taskmaster. In our off hours, we did fun, normal family stuff. Little League, wrestling on the living room floor, dinners out at the Sizzler in our hometown of Burbank. My mother coined a term for herself and Dad, sophisticated hicks, worldly enough to broaden their horizons through travel and the performing arts, yet homespun enough to live simply and humbly, as if the next town over wasn't Hollywood, but Duncan, Oklahoma. Ron and I decided to share our story of growing up as the products of these sophisticated hicks. Just your typical post-war tale of a tight nuclear family whose two kids happen to be on TV all the time.